I call the meeting of the Legacy Finance Committee to order, and we do have a quorum. We'll do the approval of minutes first. We have the minutes from April 8th, 2026. Would anyone like to move the minutes?
I beat you to the mic, Representative. So, Madam Chair, I would move the minutes.
All right. Representative Heinzen moved the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, today we have one bill, which is House File 3879, which is the Legacy Finance Outdoor Heritage Bill. And this bill will be referred to, so I move that House File 3879 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. There's also an author's amendment to the bill to get in the shape of the author's preference. And I move the DE1. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And so, members, the DE1 has all the recommendations from the LaSalle Sam's Outdoor Council that we've has spent the interim reviewing and going through the process, and this is their recommendation for this year. I'll have nonpartisan staff walk through the bill, and we'll start with Mr. Brad Hagemeyer with the fiscal analysis.
Madam Chair, I'll be working off a spreadsheet. Top left corner, it says Legacy Finance, House File 3879-DE1. Top right corner, it's updated for 8-26 at 3:27 p.m. I'm not going to go in very much detail here because you guys have all seen these projects a couple of times already. The first column, you'll see where about two-thirds of the way across the page says LSOHC revised recs. That would be the council originally made the recommendations in December or January of this year, and then based on the February forecast, there's some additional money available, and this is how the council had anticipated if there was a further balance, how they would be distributing it. So that follows that amount. And then the next set of columns you'll see over is the DE1, which is your amendment in front of us now. I'll just quickly go through it. Under the Prairie subdivision, there are no fiscal changes from the revised recommendations under Outdoor Heritage. But under subdivision 2, the Prairie subdivision, there's 11 projects totaling $36.387 million. Under subdivision 3, the forest section, there's four projects totaling $36.939 million. Under the wetlands, under subdivision 4, there's eight projects for $33.188 million. On the next page, you get to the subdivision 5, which is habitats. There are, and the total is on actually the next page after that, there's 27 projects totaling $82.4 million. And then the kind of last subdivision of appropriations is subdivision 6 with the administration, and there are four projects totaling $2.159 million. In total, there is $191.081 million being appropriated in the bill. In total, to get to the 5% reserve, you could have appropriated $191.106, so it's $25,000 under the 5% reserve amount. But for all purposes, it's right at the 5% reserve. Then you go to subdivision 10. There are two carry forwards for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, one for the St. Louis River Restoration Project, and that's $1.2 million that's being carried forward. And then from Blaza 21, and then from Blaza 22, the Daylighting Failing Creek, there's $2.535 million being carried forward. And then addition to the bill would be section 3. There's kind of an extension amendment. The overall, this is the one that was heard in committee for the protecting the upper Mississippi River from invasive carp. This would be the carp barrier project where they needed that kind of internal time frame changed to make it work. There's a little over $11 million being carried forward in that appropriation. And that's all for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. At the bottom of page 3, you'll see the Parks and Trails Fund. And this, on the very last page of the spreadsheet, just has the extensions that were talked about in committee at an earlier date. The first five extensions are all from the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails appropriations from 2023. And you can see the various amounts of the original appropriation and then how much is being carried forward. And then the last one is the coordination among partners appropriation from 2023 as well. And that's all I have. There are no changes being made to Clean Water Fund or to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund in this DE amendment.
All right, thank you. Next we have Janelle Taylor who will go through the DE1 language.
Okay.
Chair and members, I'm going to go through the DE1 amendment just very briefly. Article 1 is the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The first two sections reflect the language that was in the bill as it was introduced, and then the numbers reflect the revised recommendations that were in the spreadsheet that Mr. Hagemeyer. There were just a few very minor technical changes to change act to article and then to correct a phase number. And then if you, section 3, starting on page 26 and then going to page 37 is where the actual language changes. That is the carp deterrent at lock and dam extension. And then Article 2 is the Parks and Trails Fund. This article contains Representative Scraba's House File 3564 as it was laid over, which included the A1 amendment with the additional extension. And those were the, there were no changes to that language as it was laid over. And that concludes the DE1 amendment.
Thank you. We also have amendments on the bill. However, we do have a number of testimony here. So we will go through public testimony first, and then we'll go with amendments. We've already discussed in the previous meeting regarding the Roselle project. And so I will like to ask testifiers who wants to speak on the specific project to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, and so that way we can continue to move forward with our business. We have Debbie Stone from the Minnesota Landowners Coalition up first, and then next we'll have Eric Cardall and Tammy Kreese on deck. Yeah, feel free to make your way to the table, too. And then if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes. Thank you. My name is Debbie Stone, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Landowners Coalition and also am a landowner in the affected project areas. We know that we are taking more time from the committee, but we wanted to make sure we discussed a couple of key issues that over the last week have really crystallized for us. As you know, we have ongoing litigation, as well as have been trying to follow the legislative process. And really, you know, we're looking for some help here, because both processes are a little cumbersome for us. We're landowners. We don't do this professionally every day, and we are trying to do our best to advocate for ourselves. So today, I really want to ask for your support here. Over the weekend, I went through the funding bill, and we actually identified over 20 line items and phases that directly would contribute to the types of activities that the OHF funds fund. So not only is it the phase three line item, but I didn't realize, but I highlighted all of those on the funding tracker bill. And the Senate committee actually helped us come up with a report on what these phases are. What are the activities? Well, when you correlate the phases with the various funding partners, so the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Rosa River Watershed District works with Ducks Unlimited, the DNR, Bowser, the Red River Watershed Management Board are all co-collaborators and program people. And we fear that even if we got some sort of relief from you, which we're praying we do, to pause funding for phase three, that these other partners could come in and do this really eminent domain work without saying that they're working on behalf of the project. And so if you are offering an amendment on this topic, we ask for your leadership, your ability to work in a bipartisan way to just help us pause this funding, help us get a legal lens, and allow the legislature also, as well as these agencies, to do the right thing.
All right, thank you,
Ms. Stone. I don't want to take your time. We obviously have other people who can speak to various aspects.
Thank you, Debbie Stone. Eric Cardall, if you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, my name is Eric Cardall. I represent the landowners, and I've already spoken on the restriction that these outdoor heritage funds can't be used on private property. And now, since last week, I've got some receipts to share with you. So, first of all, there's an email from the RWD engineer to Tom Enright in 2022, and the RRWD admits to the DNR, as far as recording rights of ways on parcels, whether it was a state, judicial, or county ditch, it seems that our forefathers were pretty lax on recording ROWs. It should have said purchasing ROWs, because these have not been purchased. And then the DNR wrote back, this is Mr. Enright, Assistant Area Wildlife Manager. Thanks, Torin. My only question then is whether easements should be assumed based on a 66-foot total right-of-way for our purposes. I'm afraid documentation of some sort will be required. So when right-of-ways are purchased, and so here the DNR knows that the project's on private land, and the ROW is acknowledging there's no record of a right-of-way, and the DNR is involved in this. So what we're looking at is suing the Commissioner of Minnesota Management Budget, the DNR, and also the county, who are involved in facilitating the recording of right-of-ways in drainage records, which aren't purchased. And the reason they're recording the right-of-ways in the drainage records is to qualify for the outdoor heritage funds. And this is a violation of the restriction that outdoor heritage fund projects are not supposed to be done on private land. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Cardall. And then Tammy Creese, identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Tammy Creese. My great-grandparents were among those that homesteaded in Roseau and worked with the state to create the 1916 drainage ditch system that's still used today. But today that partnership feels very different. Landowners cannot compete with the resources of the Minnesota DNR and the watershed. They have massive budgets, tremendous resources, teams of lobbyists, and wield an incredible amount of power. We're landowners, farmers, ordinary people, fighting for our constitutional rights and the lands our families have stewarded for generations. And this fight's taking a tremendous toll. Our nightmares are filled with the tactics we've missed that the DNR and watershed could employ next to illegally take our land. Many landowners in their 70s and 80s fear retaliation for speaking out. They worry about their ability to pass this farmland on to the next generation. I worry about my ability to pass it on to mine. You've heard about the financial burden, hydrologist fees, more pending, mounting legal fees. I struggle with the testimony from last week that suggested that because so much money has been spent on the project to date, it would be a shame not to finish. For those whose lands and livelihoods aren't at risk, that may seem reasonable. But for the families who stand to lose their productive multi-generational farmland, homes, and outbuildings, sunk costs are the least of the issue. It's the irreversible impact on people's lives. Is a pond for ducks really worth more than that? We're not asking for special treatment. We're asking for the time and the due process we're entitled to. And we desperately need your help. It's not about just land, it's legacy, livelihood, and our fundamental rights. We respectfully ask you to keep all funding paused.
All right, thank you. All right, next we have on deck is Kurt Veen, Maxwell Becker, and Matthew Magnuson. If you guys can make your way to the testifying table. Welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the record.
Good morning.
And proceed.
My name is Kurt Queen. I am a landowner in Roseau and a farmer directly involved by this project. I did draft another letter and a speech, and recently we located a letter that my father wrote about 10 years ago. I don't know if this letter was ever sent. I don't know if he ever addressed it in front of any board. My father's 85. I've said it in every speech I've ever given. He's been fighting this project since he was 70. Now he's 84. He's still very much involved and wishes he could be here. I'm sorry. I'm going to read the letter that my father drafted. It's 2 a.m. It does not seem like I slept very well, like I sleep very well lately. I try to smile on the outside while crying on the inside. I'm very concerned about the future of my farm. Many people today do not understand the connection to the land that people and families have. It's a very strong bond, like a mother to a child. You do not give up your child willingly. The First Nations of Canada filed suit and claimed spiritual land, ties to their lands. In 1977, Supreme Court in Canada gave them the right to maintain their lands, and it's constitutionally recognized and legally protected. They're a good example of how important a connection to the land is with the people. Are you comfortable reminding them that over the last week, we have uncovered significant evidence that documents the process used to the Outdoor Heritage Funds? But what is most important is that this is our land. And then read your father's words. So it does affect people very hard. Like I said, my father, my uncles, they're devastated. There's not a day that goes by that we're that this isn't discussed amongst us. And I request and plead that this funding be suspended until we have a chance to see it through the suits. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have is Maxwell Becker. I believe he is virtual. Can you hear us, Maxwell?
I can hear y'all. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Maxwell Dean Becker. I'm an attorney with Mormon Cardall and Erickson. You heard from Mr. Cardall earlier. I'm here today to talk about the violations of the statutory floor for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So under Minnesota statutes 97A.056, the law is unambiguous. Outdoor heritage money shall not be spent to acquire property by eminent domain unless the owner requests that acquisition. This is a consent-based fund. But the district is using these habitat dollars to force through a project against the explicit documented will of the people that actually live there. You've heard from a lot of these people over the past few meetings. You've heard from myself and Eric Cardall, their attorneys. Make no mistake, the plaintiffs we represent in the referenced federal case do not consent to the use of eminent domain to take possession of their land. That's whether it's in the form of an easement, flooding, or hydrological capacity. Currently, the project is being funded through Minnesota's Lesser Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council Fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, supported by taxpayer dollars and approved through the legislature. LSOHC funding cannot be used to acquire property by eminent domain unless the owner requests it, and we do not. By funding a project that involves taking land from owners who are actively suing to stop it, the state is violating the core mandate of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And further, by funding a project that may well be found illegal in the federal court system, the state runs the risk of paying for something that it and its citizens will never actually have. A pause is necessary, and while this action just plays out in court, I urge the committee to stop the funding until the district can prove it has the consent required by law. Thank you.
All right. Next we have is Matthew Magnuson, who is also virtual. If you can hear us, Matthew.
Yes. Yes, again.
All right. If you can, we can also hear you if you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Wait, good morning. My name is Matt Magnuson. I'm a farmer and landowner in and around the Rosa Lake Rehab Project area. In addition to farming, I hunt and fish in the area and reside nearby. The ongoing project is already causing damage and creating hardships for area farmers. One specific concern is the construction of the weir or dam. Personally observed the negative effects of weir installed in a cutoff channel during phase one of this project. This channel serves as a vital private drainage ditch route for the area. Fortunately, the Watershed District did not disclose details about this project. The weir was originally intended to be 4 feet tall from the bottom of the channel. However, the weir was built approximately 10 to 12 feet tall in the bottom of the channel. And according to project engineers, the weir would back up water only a few tenths of a foot. 3 tenths of a foot, 3.6 inches, with the increase diminishing to nothing upstream at Stoley's Bridge, 1.7 miles away. The statement from the engineer is inaccurate. Multiple water elevation surveys have shown that the water level increase is well over a foot, 13 tenths or 15.6 inches. And as of last night, the water level increase was about 2 feet at the weir. This increase causes water to back up on our ag land. These higher river levels upstream also limit our ability to drain into the river. It is important to note that there has not been a significant runoff event since the weir's installation. As a result, the weir is damming water to levels that are negatively impacting area farms. I also serve as a Jadis Township supervisor. And in 2021, Roseau County and Jadis Township collaborated to replace a bridge spanning the cutoff channel. A different engineering firm determined that two large concrete box culverts, each 16 feet wide, were necessary to maintain the flow in the channel to prevent upstream flooding. Project Weir, or dam, is now located directly upstream of these culverts, blocking them off until the water overtops the weir. Furthermore, the weir was constructed using materials taken from an existing dike on private property without the landowner knowledge or consent. I've also brought these concerns to our county board, and they are currently looking into it. I urge you in your roles as committee members to withhold any funding for this project or any other Outdoor Heritage Funds partners, funds that support it. Thank you.
All right, next we have is Isaac Magnuson and Mitchell Magnuson, who is also virtual. Isaac, if you can hear us.
Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. All right, if you can state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Isaac Magnuson. I began working on our family farm at 14, and for the past 5 years, I've operated my own. 95% of my acreage lies directly along the Roseau River inside the footprint of this proposed project. Because of that, the decisions made here have direct, measurable consequences for my ability to plant, harvest, and maintain a viable operation. If this project results in prolonged flooding or restricts access to my field during the growing season, it effectively removes my land from production. This is not just an inconvenience, it is a loss of my family's primary source of income. I also want to emphasize the long-term implications. My son is 3, and he already spends a lot of time with me on the farm. This land is his future as much as mine. Policy decisions that compromise its usability doesn't just affect one season, this affects the next generation. I respectfully ask the committee to ensure that any project moving forward protects working farmland, follows established requirements, and does not place family operations like mine at risk. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Next we have is Mitchell Magnuson. If you can hear us, Mitchell.
All right. Chair and members of the committee.
Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm requesting that you halt funding on the Roseau Lake Rehabilitation and Roseau River Restoration Projects until significant legal and design issues are fully addressed. The map included with my testimony reflects an early project design. Each red square represents 640 acres. The thick blue, orange, and purple lines mark proposed dikes at elevation 1036 with 1034 weirs. Everything inside the dotted blue line is state land. The land to the immediate south of the dotted line is privately owned and currently protected by only 1031 and a half foot dikes. The purple dike had been originally included because the Watershed District wanted to own the dike and purchase flood easements on the private land inside it. The project included two poles on private land marked by X's on the map. This demonstrates that flooding private land was contemplated from the beginning. Landowners refused to sell either land or easements Because of that refusal, the watershed eliminated the entire south dike concept from the revised alternative. It's critical to note that the Rosa River lies south of the state's 1036-foot dike. Historically, water has always pooled north of the Blue Line dike. Under the current design with 1036 dikes and with the Department of Natural Resources controlling flows into the lake bottom, water will either be forced either downstream or back onto private land to the south. This is a dramatic departure from natural hydrology. Now, with the revised design, even on public lands southeast of the Blue Line dikes are at risk, increased risk of flooding. From the earliest project work team meeting, landowners repeatedly asked for agency to consider a smaller scale project. Those concerns were dismissed. The pattern is clear. The intent has consistently been to build a large project that places private land at risk without landowner consent. For these reasons, I respectfully urge the committee to pause all funding until a lawful decision is made by the court. Thank you.
All right. We have two more testifiers left. Jason Bratton, and then we have Mayor Dan Fabian as well. Please make your way to the testifying table, and if you can state your name for the record and proceed. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jason Broughton. I'm a fifth generation farmer in Rosa County. My family has lived and farmed on our land for over 136 years. Needless to say, we've seen a lot of water issues over the years. My farm is on the very edge of the Rosa Lake bottom. We have beachfront property on some years. I've been in my tractor and I've seen whitecaps out on that lake bottom multiple times. I also am a manager of the Rosa River Watershed District and a delegate to the Red River Water Management Board. Right now, the water is not controlled coming out of the Rosa Lake Basin. With this project, we'll have upwards of 22,000 acre feet of controlled water storage. That's a big deal. This allows adjacent and downstream landowners a greater opportunity to get rid of their water on their land. Because we farm in northern Minnesota, our growing season isn't very long. The engineering shows that producers downstream of this project will be able to get in their land 7 to 10 days earlier. I've heard people say that this project won't work, but this isn't something new. There are projects like this all over the valley. All you have to do is go for a drive up and down the Red River Basin. Farmers are growing sugar beets, potatoes, corn, and soybeans. Currently on our farm, we are growing soybeans and wheat. I remember my dad telling me stories of him and the neighbors going out in the lake bottom, thinking it's going to be a dry year, plow up 40 acres in the spring, and have a 3-inch rain come and get everything flooded out. This project not only helps surrounding farmers, it is also a great recreational area. If it has fur, feathers, or scales, my family has hunted or fished out there. We look forward to continue our farming and recreational traditions with your help. Thank you for your time, and I hope you will support this project.
All right, thank you. We have Mayor Dan Fabian, who is virtual. Mayor, if you can hear us. If you're speaking, you're muted. All right, Mayor Fabian, if you can hear us, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dan Fabian. I am the mayor of the city of Roseau. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. In your packet, members, you should see three different items, one a letter from myself and two resolutions passed by the Roseau City Council unanimously, one in 2020 and one just in the past few weeks. In both of those resolutions, the City Council of the City of Roseau unanimously supports the project that we're discussing today. A little background is really helpful. In 2002, the city of Roseau suffered a summer catastrophic flood that resulted in the loss of all kinds of property, not just in the city of Roseau, but throughout Roseau County. In the end, when we got all done, approximately $100 million was spent restoring and rebuilding large parts of the city of Roseau and Roseau County. Included in that was about $29 million of state funding that came from a special session that was held in September of 2002. This project on the Rosa Lake rehab project, in my opinion, is a valuable piece of a puzzle that will help to reduce flood damage through parts of Rosa County into the future. In 2002, plans were developed to develop the West Intercept Ditch, which protects the city of Rosa, and then also the East Diversion. And those projects have done a lot to remove the city of Rosa from the floodplain and flood damage. And again, like I said, I think that this project in the Rosa Lake is a valuable piece in mitigating flood damage through parts of Rosa County. I would encourage the members of the committee to keep the funding for the Rosa Lake Rehabilitation Project in the bill. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mayor Fabian. Members, that is all that we have for testimony for regarding this bill. We'll move on to amendments. We have three amendments on our agenda. The first one is the A5. Who wants to offer the A5 amendment? Representative Heintzman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is my amendment. Members, this is a tough one. There's a lot of moving parts, and we've heard about litigation ongoing. We've heard from many of the landowners here testifying to our committee. I'm just going to share a little personal background. Some might be aware, some might not. Previous to coming to the legislature, I was a watershed district manager for a time. And there's some things about a watershed district that sometimes aren't well understood. There's a lot of power at that level that you might not expect. For example, there's levy authority. The managers themselves, myself included, those are appointed positions, not elected. Watershed districts were created in many cases in the 60s. I believe this one in particular, the Rosa River Watershed District, was created in 1963. They were established statutorily because we were lacking regulatory authority and rules, which I also have some rulemaking authority as well. We didn't have active policy on a lot of things that we think today as like very basic, like septic systems, for example. In Lake Country, it was not uncommon for septic systems to just run a pipe right out to the lake. And watershed districts did a really, really important job cleaning those kinds of things up. And even still today, there's plenty of good examples. I'm offering the amendment today, the A5, because I think that some steps might have been missed. And some of those things that you want to believe are just happening, like, for example, the relationship building and the trust that can come between government or can be built between government and, say, for example, landowners, just isn't there. And I would encourage members to support the amendment. The purpose of it, in my mind, would be to tap the brakes and hopefully back up and reestablish the trust or establish, either way, I'm going to hope that could be possible. Because right now it's very clear with the number of affected farmers and landowners in that area that they do not have the confidence that I hope would be there if you're going to be spending this kind of money. I believe we're, in my amendment, deleting, it's on page 10, lines 9 to line 15. Yes, correct. I'm probably not going to be successful today, but I do think it's important that we talk for a minute about this and that we take the time to think about what we're doing, especially when you consider that there is pending litigation. If that's the precedent that we want to send or to establish today, that, you know, there could be all kinds of decisions yet to be made in the court, and we're just going to go ahead and put money towards a project that very easily could sit on the bottom line. At the Lessard Sams, we unfortunately have had a lot of examples of projects that get support from the council, that come to us here in the legislature, and then just sit, sometimes for 5 years. That could be going to do things that are ready to go right now. And it makes sense to me today that we do, like I said, tap the brakes and remove this project. So with that, Madam Chair, I will stand for any questions members might have, or we can move forward with a decision.
Representative Heitzman, could you also briefly explain what the AFI does, just so for the public understands?
Madam Chair, that's what I mentioned, that it deletes the project, the Roseau Lake Rehabilitation Project Phase 3, from the bill before us.
Okay. Discussion. Representative Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also support Representative Heinzman's motion, and for the reason that we are appreciative of the Lessard Sams and the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the board bringing us their recommendations. I have come to appreciate that and depend upon that, and know that those projects are vetted exclusively and very diligently. And I think this legacy committee needs that and has come to appreciate that, because they're doing the lion's share of work. And for that, we thank you for that work. I've trusted as a chairman, I've needed to trust that. And we voted last year on a legacy bill that funds all the projects that the Outdoor Heritage Fund suggested. Same with the Parks and Trails and the other components of our bill. I think after listening to the farmers and those who've been farming that land for generations, we would be remiss if we didn't at least pause and listen to them. Farmers are the salt of the earth. They feed the world. These are generational farmers who are completely at wit's end, worried about their land, whether it's right or not, whether their models are correct or the models of the project are correct. But for us not to at least have the opportunity, well, we do have the opportunity, to take a pause and remove the project, and listening twice now to the farmers who've been farming this land longer than any of us in this room have been alive, that if we don't take into consideration their concerns and just blatantly say, nope, we think you're wrong, we're going to pass this, I think that we'd be foolish in not doing that. So I support the amendment. The recommendations are not perfect from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Nobody's perfect. Maybe their models of the farmers, their engineers, aren't perfect either. We certainly would hate to find out in the end that the project indeed flooded generational farmers. I'll further say it might be a little bit, no, I'm just, I think that's it. I think we need to support this, members. I hope that our side, all of us, will support this, and our DFL Democrat Farm Laborers, my friends over there for the Democrat Farm Laborers, will support the farmers who for 100 years, farm the land said they are very concerned with this.
All right, thank you, Chair. Any further discussion? Representative Burkle?
Thank you, Chair Vang. And I just want to speak to this amendment as well and thank Chair Heinzman for bringing it forward. And at the same time, I want to defend a little bit of the process Lessard Sam is going through, despite what looks to be a flawed situation here. But in particular, staff and Chair Hartwell, actually, looking back on my last 3 years on Lessard Sam, I want to make sure that there's at least a shout out to the fact that in many circumstances during committee, and Chair Vang, you've been on a year now. Representative Lilly, you've been on before, Chair Heinzman. But in my experience with Chair Hartwell, he's been very careful when projects are being vetted to hold folks accountable coming in to ask for these dollars to make sure that they're meant for restoration enhancement and not flood mitigation. I've heard him ask that question 1,000 times in committee as we're vetting projects. So I want to make sure I bring that up, staff as well. Beyond that, there are valid concerns from the landowners that this amendment addresses. I think, you know, given the litigation, there's conversation to be had there. I think that process needs to play out. But I think at the end of the day, we have to get to a baseline where we agree on something. And up north, when it comes to water, and as flat as we are, and with a river that runs north, there's situations that we have to address, and we have to come to some agreement between our watershed members, between our landowners, between our counties and cities, that there's a need for flood mitigation where we live. It's just part of the deal. And I think the problem we have is when you start bringing restoration enhancement dollars into should be an impoundment project, you end up with a management plan that's murky. And I think that's why we have the issues we've got right now and the mistrust. But I've said it 1,000 times up north, if you've got a flood and you're trying to deal with flood mitigation, and it's, if you want to remember it, it's F's. But it always ends up, how do you manage that water? Is it for the farmer? Is it for fish? Is it for a fen, which I never knew existed until I got on Lessard Sam's, or waterfowl? But at the end of the day, that's the problem we got, is how do these management plans work? Where do you store the water? Who's affected? And at the end of it all, landowners are where my heart lies, and I want to make sure no one's harmed by what we're doing. So I just wanted to speak to the amendment and thank Chair Heisman for bringing it forward. Thank you, Chair Vang.
Okay. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a tough one. As it was mentioned, I was lucky enough to be on Lessard Sam's and then having served on this committee all along. So I've followed Lessard Sam's piece of the pie every year, even before it was created. These situations are rare. There really hasn't been that many that have kind of gotten to this point. And I think I mentioned it, you know, we're kind of rehashing some of what we said at the last meeting. At first, and it's good to hear again from folks and then the new additional comments as well. I'm inclined to support the recommendations that come out of the council because I know they're very vetted and given a lot of thought and work, and it doesn't just show up, you know, here today for us. There's months and months and years, you know, of work on these projects. Water's super complicated in our state, and having served on this committee and, capital investment, especially the quality of water, you know, which is this, and flooding or lack of water even in our state is, it's an ongoing issue. You know, you think of land of 10,000 lakes, but we also have areas of the state that don't even have water, which, you know, so here we're in a situation where, you know, people would love to have your water, you know, down in, we have a pipe, we pipe in water all the way from the Missouri River. We call it Schumacher's big pipe, and it comes in and brings water to that part of the state of Minnesota. There's literally a county that has no lakes, which, you know, some of members, I didn't know that for a while as a member, but, you know, being a metro person, we have a county, Rock, I think it is, that could, appropriately named, has no water, so they don't have any water politics. You know, we have farms. I appreciate the farmers that are come in and having toured the state. It's fascinating. And then you get up in your area and, well, it's, you know, it's very flat in certain areas, and flat for not just for a couple miles, but for miles and miles. So I can see where, you know, if the rains come in, and I don't want to get into water politics, but, you know, it seems like these 100-year rains are coming with more frequency than, you know, we could debate why or what, but it's a thing, and things are changing a little. So the infrastructure that we create and dealing with water it's always going to be complicated. You know, this one, you know, I think I voted for it originally. We're in like phase three or something. So, you know, you get a little attached to some of the projects that you voted on. And it's good to hear from both sides. Mayor Fabian, I served with him. And like I mentioned at the last meeting, I learned about a lot of things from him when he's a member. And I know he knows this area. And I know Representative Burkle, it's got to be a nightmare for you, you know, where you probably have people on both sides of the aisle. And I don't envy you for a second. But the water, you know, the water politics is real. Like I mentioned at the last meeting, I live on a lake. I'm lucky enough to live on a lake. And it's like, I kind of have a policy as a politician that I ignore my neighbors because you're constantly fighting about water politics. The water's too high. Our lake is right high. It's really high this spring. And, you know, if our boats were out there more frequent, it'd be a no wake situation, I'm sure. Yeah. Representative Heitzman couldn't be out there with his wake boat, wake surfing. You know, the council, going back to that, they put a lot of effort into these researching. And I looked at the vote, and the vote, you know, on this particular thing, I think it was 10-2 on this project. And then the final package, which was solidly supported, a 12-0 vote coming out of the council. And going back to my original comment, I don't think these are not without thought and research. And I appreciate Representative Burkle, your comments on, you know, that the people do really take the time and look at it and ask tough questions. Sometimes it's, you know, we're in a political space, but, you know, the people that are, especially the citizens, you know, they don't feel the pressures that we would as electeds, and they are able to ask different questions. But I think overall, I think the package is really a solid package, and so hats off to Chair Vang and Representative Burkle for the rest of the projects that you're, you know, and the council that you're putting forward. And I guess I would encourage us as a committee to move this forward. I realize this is going to be in court, and so, you know, maybe it will stall out because of that at some point. And, you know, this is the additional phase, and I don't think the money is going to go out tomorrow. So there is some time between where we spend this money and moves forward and goes through the Senate and goes to the governor. There is time for people to continue to express their opinions, and also legally, you know, whatever the court decides. But I guess for me, I would encourage us as a council to move the package at the 12-0 vote. I mean, it's not even, you know, really that close. I mean, I'm not really good at math, but that's pretty clear victory. Pretty clear that the council supports the package, and I'm inclined to, at this time, to encourage that we vote in favor of the package as originally submitted and vote against the amendment. So, thank you.
All right. Chair Heintzman.
Thank you. I'll just, in my closing on the amendment, go back to my earlier comment on how watershed districts are formed and why and how they operate, and point out that in the case of the 30 Lakes Watershed District where I served, it's gone now. And I hope that that is a cautionary tale for the Roseau River Watershed District, that even if this amendment fails today, that there's obviously some problems and there needs to be better communication, better collaboration when you have this many people this concerned about how they're personally going to be affected, their livelihoods are at stake, something's wrong. And even if, as Co-Chair McDonald mentioned, that maybe our DFL friends, who we would think would typically be connecting with the concerns of those in the agriculture community, aren't necessarily willing to consider my amendment, there's still opportunity to make an adjustment. And I would argue there has to be an adjustment when you have the kinds of problems that we're hearing about in St. Paul. And it is not impossible or entirely unrealistic for a change to be made to the recommendations. It's happened before, and I think that it's our responsibility to take some of these recommendations post the 12-0 vote and consider the, maybe to some, new information that has been brought to us. There's a reason that the way all this works is that the legislature has to concur with the recommendations brought forward by the Lessard SAMs. That's because we are supposed to look at it and decide whether or not something needs to change. And in my mind, something really does need to change. And I hope that my words aren't falling on deaf ears up there in Roseau, and that the watershed district would recognize they have a responsibility, even though they might not have an election certificate, even though there may be personalities involved at a number of levels. This needs to be looked at more closely, and whatever is broken in terms of communication and collaboration, that needs to get fixed, or it quite literally could go away. So I'll leave it there, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to close, and we can finish up with the A5.
Okay, Chair McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you. Chair Heisen closed it up, and that's fine. I just wanted to really briefly acknowledge the fact that there are some very important projects in here: Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, St. Louis County. We acknowledge there's some very important projects, and to restore, protect, and enhance prairies and forests and habitat for game, fish, and wildlife. But if there's a slight chance whatsoever in nature that the farmers are right, we've potentially ruined their generations of farming. And for that reason, I have to support his bill. And if it's not, if Heisman's amendment is not accepted, I cannot support the final bill because of the, listen to the testimony. That's just, that has to be a consideration if we at least don't pause for a moment. And if my friends, Representative Lilly, if you guys don't accept at least our amendment to help those who've driven, some of them twice now, 6 hours or 12 hours, then I'm gonna put F in my name, GOPF. Grand old party for farmers, because that's who I've listened to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A5 amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. No.
Division, Madam Chair.
Division being called.
And ask for a roll call.
No,
just a division.
She's got to call it first.
So you say it. Based on what you think you're going to do.
Oh, okay.
It was so quick.
All right. Well, like you were just one second snap. Before. So, well, the chair will say the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Now, since you said that, Madam Chair, I'll call division.
All right. Division being called. I believe Isabel will raise your hand. All right. All right. Those in favor of the A5, raise your hand. Okay. Those opposed, say nay. I mean, raise your hand to no. And then Representative Hulda Hitzley is remote. Representative Hulda, if you can raise your hand.
It doesn't matter.
She did speak.
She spoke?
Yeah, she during the vote.
I vote no. Thank you.
Okay. So there being six and six, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. All right. The next amendment that we have is the A8. Who offers the A8 amendment? Representative Burkle to the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is part of my bill we heard back in committee last month. An amendment about strengthening the integrity of the process for hiring the executive director of LSART-SAMS. And it starts with the key principle that the best hiring decisions begin with professional, nonpartisan reviews of candidates. And that's why this approach uses an experienced nonpartisan staff to kind of conduct initial screenings and interviews, focusing first on qualifications and merit. And from there, a smaller panel that would include bipartisan legislative members and one of the public members would review candidates and would either reach a unanimous decision or agreement on a candidate and forward that candidate along or forward multiple options to the full council. And I believe this amendment would ensure both fairness and accountability to the process. And Madam Chair, that is my amendment.
All right. Discussion to the A8. Sorry, just putting my things. All right.
Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
Roll call being requested. There will be roll call. Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will be brief, but we've spoken to this in previous occasions, and this is about going forward, not about looking backwards. And having previously served on the LSART-SAMS and having served at the LCCMR and being a part of the hiring process on a number of occasions, the concerns that we have been hearing about, I think, could very easily be addressed today. There's this amendment, which I support, and another amendment coming, and I hope that we could find agreement on these things, on this amendment specifically. I'll leave it there, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair Heinzman. Members, as a council, as a member of the Outdoor Heritage Council, it was my first time. I learned a lot while being there. I also did not expect that to also dove head straight in the hiring process of the new executive director, too. And although I understand that any process can always be improved. I think that what the work that the council did in terms of vetting the process, vetting the grants, the proposals, and also hiring a new executive director, I think they have been very thorough and reliable in ensuring that we do have the best candidate moving forward. And although you know, I agree that there could be improvements or other ways that we can do things, but I don't think that what is offered today will get us there. And so I will ask that members to not support the A8 amendment. Any further discussion to the A8? And there was a roll call requested, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And with that, we will start with roll call.
Co-Chair Vang.
No.
Co-Chair McDonald.
Aye.
Co-Chair Hussein.
No.
Co-Chair, Co-Vice Chair Scrapa. Co-Vice Chair yes. Scrapa. Representative Brickle.
Aye.
Representative Cha.
No.
Representative DePauw.
Aye. I thought you had called on me. My apologies.
Representative Heintzman.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Momani Hiltzley.
No.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Zhang.
All right, there being six ayes and six nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The next amendment that we have is the A7. Who offers the A7? Representative Burkle to the A7.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Chair Vang. The A7 amendment is consistent with legislative precedent for the Citizens Council or Citizens Commission on Governments in Minnesota. Back in 23, I think I presented this in committee as well. Chair Hansen and Senator Fongher established statutory limits for citizen members of the LCCMR. This would apply a similar approach for Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council members, strengthening accountability and ensuring diverse viewpoints. As Chair Hansen stated back in 2023, the proposed term limit strikes that balance, allowing members enough time to understand the complex funding formulas involved and processes involved with Lasard Sam's vetting, and but also contributing meaningfully while preventing entrenchment and encouraging new participation. So with that, that's what the amendment does. It would put term limits in for 8 years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Chair Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just request a roll call before I begin my comments. I alluded to the process that I was involved in at the LCCMR in previous years in the amendment that failed a moment ago, and I'll go back to that again now and point out that term limits is something that recently passed and has had bipartisan support. It's, I think, something that generally both sides recognize that can be a beneficial addition to the requirements for service, and just would speak in favor of the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Further discussion? Oh, Representative Scraba.
You know, Madam Chair, I've just been appointed LCCMR, and this is all kind of new for me, the whole term limits and everything. But the more I started reading and looking and delving into it, and my past experiences being on city councils, being mayors, appointing people from the public to sit on committees and commissions, every one of them had a term limit. I went back and looked. Every one we did, because we, as elected officials, our term limits are two as a House and four in the Senate. So we're always being checked and balanced. So when we put someone on a committee or a commission, sometimes they can be there 9 years. I sat on Second Harvest Food Bank, and there was a term limit of 9 years. So I spent 9 years driving from Ely to Duluth once a month to be on this committee. It's important. But it was termed out. You couldn't go longer. And it's just, you got new people. You got fresh ideas, new ideas. I think that's healthy. I think that's positive. Because then you don't have the fiefdoms. You know, if you want something, you got to go through me. And there's no check and balance. If they're there forever, there's no balance to me. It's like, this isn't asking a lot. I think this is more than fair. And I think it would reflect of who we are and what we are. So I support the amendment. Thank you.
Chair McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just encourage all of us to support this amendment. It's good to have institutional knowledge, as Chair Vang and I spoke last night on the phone, and I agree with you. And certainly by doing this, it doesn't get rid of that. An 8-year term is institutional knowledge. I remember Representative Garofalo, when I first got elected and took office, oath of office in 2011, he said it'll take at least 6 years before you know what the heck you're doing around here. And I've been, it took 8 years. I've been here, 16 years, but 8 years. So 8 years is a good amount of time, actually it's even less than that, to have that good institutional knowledge. And so too is the fact that I have new members, have new people run. And I think that's the same true in this seat. I hope to be done here at least in 20 years and let another new young fella or gal come on board and serve. But it's important to have that turnover and that fresh ideas and the opportunity to serve such a esteemed and great board, the Lessard Sams, because they do give, they get to see and restore and protect America and Minnesota. So I think I would support his amendment and ask you, Chair Vang, and your members to support as well for the fact of we're still going to get that institutional knowledge and you'll get new, fresh, young thoughts and ideas for them to contribute to such an important board. I hope that makes sense to you. Chair Lilly, I hope you're listening intently and writing every word I said and taking that that I am correct and you should support this. And with that, we will get out of here very successfully.
All right, Chair Lilly.
Man, I'm getting in trouble today. I was kind of doodling while you were talking.
Doodling.
Very much listening. thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, both of these amendments, I'm not, militantly personally against either one of them. I think they're really good to have discussion about, and I am going to vote against this one. Sorry. No, I think I mentioned that to most of you before already that I would, or at the last hearing on this one. But I there's kind of, it's funny, there is a natural turnover. There is term limits technically because everybody has to all of us elected, you need to be, for all of our committee assignments, you have to be put on, for example, legacy. Then you also, maybe not even legacy, you don't have to be, but and then you need to be, the speaker will decide who gets put on these commissions. So it's not it's not a sure thing. I've actually been on and off for in all honesty, I've been appointed by more often by Republican speakers in my experience than my own team. So that's an interesting history on my experience. But there is transitions that happen, and then the citizens, they're appointed by the governor, and the governor changes. And yes, the last trend has been since Pawlenty that they're all Democrats, but there's been, a variety of governors. And so the governor, to be on this commission, you need to be appointed by the governor or by the speakers in this case of the House, and then the president of the Senate would decide who is on this commission. So, and that changes. And also during my time and the time of these funds, it's GOP has had gavels. So they've been in charge of certainly the Senate and have made selections that might have been different. So there is turnover that happens just organically. But I do think some of the changes that have been made, the appointments, especially I noticed on the LCCMR, are reaching into demographically maybe people that traditionally have not been on. And I think the LCCMR has been very blessed with that. And Lessard Sams also has made some changes that reaches into groups that have not been at these tables. And so I think the appointments have been really solid appointments in that case. So I guess I think some of these transitions or changes happen organically, and I'm speaking against this amendment at this time. Thank you.
All right, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. just to enhance on what Representative Lilly, by having limits, then you give the people that aren't normally on there more of an opportunity than having the person who's the most popular person. And, well, of course they're going to appoint that person. They're always good. They're great. Yeah, they are, but they've been there forever. It's time to give that new fisherman, that new hunter, that new person an opportunity. And I don't think we're asking for a lot. I mean, you're already admitting that there is turnover within, but this guarantees the turnover, you know, rather than someone having a self-introspective going, you know, I think I've been on there long enough. I'm going to get off. Or a governor coming on, whether it's sometimes you don't want to mess the apple cart up with a governor appointment. You still want those people on there, and you lobby the governor saying, hey, keep that person on. We want them on. They're going to leave in one term anyway. And then you get a new turnover. But having this as a backdrop, as a foundation, I think makes it's not asking a lot, and I think it's fair. I don't see any unfair here. We're not going back and saying, well, you got Alf, you got everyone stays on that's on till it's termed out. So I just think it's we did it for LCCMR. We're doing it for the others now. So I think we could follow that suit and it would work. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it is bipartisan. Thank you.
Chair McDonald, did you want to say something or?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Seeing no further discussion, then the clerk will take the roll.
Co-chair Vang.
No.
Co-chair McDonald.
Yes.
Co-vice chair Hussein.
No.
Co-vice chair Scraba.
Yes.
Representative Burkle.
Yes.
Representative Cha.
No.
Representative DePell.
Yes.
Representative Heintzman.
Yes.
Representative Lilly. No. Representative Momani Hildsley.
No.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Zhang.
No.
All right. There being 6 ayes and 6 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. And members, now we are moving to discussion to the bill as amended. Discussion. Seeing the DE one. Yeah. The discussion to the bill with the DE one as amended. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I kind of want to go back to thanking the people that were on the council for the work that they put in, because I know that they toured the state and put a lot of thought into these projects. And I encourage members to really look at it that aren't on the commission. And I know Representative Burkle and Chair Vang have really dug in, but just encourage the rest of us members to look deeper. And I mean, there's some really amazing projects that are done in this space around the entire state of Minnesota, and encourage your communities, especially with the cycles that are coming, to apply for the small grant program. It was nice to hear from Representative Fabian on the Zoom. Him and I kind of got that small grants program, so I'm kind of partial to that. And a lot of communities that can't get the big grants, perhaps, whether in greater Minnesota or in the metro, can apply for these, and really encourage you to apply for them and apply for these funds. But I think it's a good package. And I want to fight back for a second on the farmer issue, because I don't think that's totally fair. Not as much in this package, but there's in the Clean Water Council, for example, we started an amazing farm certification program that works with farmers all over the state, willing farmers, hundreds of them. And one of them is one of your members, Jacobs. Representative Jacobs is if you drive up to his farm, he's got a certified farm sign on his property. And these are willing farmers that are worked with in the state. But I kind of go back to the original comment that, you know, water is complicated and there's tons of politics in it. And I don't think people know, unless you've been on capital investment, especially as Metro members, there's actually dikes around farms in greater Minnesota because of flooding. They literally have their own barriers. That's, you know, around a farmstead. And I've never seen such a thing. I mean, I've seen a lot of farms in southern Minnesota and my whole life, but then you get out there and that's how flat and the real the water issues are. So I appreciate the discussion, but to say that we're on this side against farming is, it's really not totally fair. But I think it's a great package and appreciate all the work that especially Chair Vang and Representative Burkle put in and the council. Thank you.
All right, Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Vang, and thank you, Representative Lilly, for those comments. As Chair Vang found out this summer, it's a lot of time spent vetting projects over the course of the summer. Not a perfect process when you're learning it, especially. I've learned a few things, particularly this year, given the circumstances revolving around the Roseau Lake situation, on how I'm going to go forward ranking projects. There's definitely going to be a different perspective on my scoring sheet as things progress. But I just want to thank you for your comments about farmers. But I will say this, and I think what we're missing in the Roseau Lake conversation by dismissing that amendment is the fact that, you know, not only are we dealing with clean water and restoration enhancement or whatever, but Lasart Sam's legacy in general is arts, heritage, and culture as well, correct? And we all talk about that. It's some of our, I think that's Representative Olson's favorite part of the bill, if I remember correctly. But there's a culture that revolves around a river that you grew up by. And I think folks need to understand that the people here today testifying have a vested interest in the farms that they grew up on generationally. I know everybody around that area. I mean, the folks that testified, the folks that haven't, I've heard it from everyone. But I just want everyone to, on the committee to understand that there's a culture in the Rosa River as well. You think there's a culture along the Mississippi, there's a culture all over the state. And if you've done enough parades, you know that every town you go in has its own culture as well. And the more time you spend there, the more you understand it. So I think what you heard today was an emotional plea that this is our culture. I hope you understand that it's not just about farming, although it is, of course, an economic driver in my district. But it's about the culture that these folks grew up in. And I think we need to really stand back and think about what we're doing. And when I vet projects on Lasart Sam's going forward, I'm going to keep that in mind. Given that today I'm inclined to probably abstain from the vote just because I have a lot of personal interests involved. I'm hopeful that moving forward as Lasart Sam's projects are weaved and folded into flood mitigation projects, there's going to be a different conversation on my end next year in council. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm just going to try to help people understand where we're at today. This side of the table is asking, I think, for some very basic and reasonable changes to some processes for hiring and for term limiting, because there are examples of those that have served decades at the Lasart Sam's. And then the removal of one project. And I think that we need sort of some context for everyone that may be interested. We're talking about spending $191 million. There's 53 projects by my account. I might be off, but the amendment that was offered to change one thing, a difference of just $3 million out of 191 was rejected, as well as changes to how we go about doing a few things in terms of, like I said, hiring and term limits. Those things were all rejected today. And this bill may not go forward today because we're apparently entrenched in our positions. And that is a shame. I wish that there could be some collaboration. I wish that there could be some discussion that could potentially address those things and a vote that could bring agreement, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that we're now going to be somewhat in limbo and putting that funding in jeopardy. And that's incredibly disappointing to me. You have the dozens of testifiers that came in on that one project. You have the example of the LCCMR and the good work that's being done there, and the changes that were made exactly as are being proposed today are very similar, being rejected, even though the work that was done on the LCCMR was bipartisan. And now we're having to have the challenges now going forward with the bill. I believe that we will come to agreement. I believe that cooler heads will prevail. But in the room today, I don't think that we're going to have the outcome that all of us want. I'll leave it there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. To the farmers that came down here today and previously, and to all those farmers that are impacted by the flood, I hear you. I hear the concerns, And I hope that in the courts that there will be a favorable outcome and resolution to remedy, those that have been impacted. And thank you, Leon, for your remarks and those that serve on the Sarge Sams. I haven't served on there, so I'm not in debt, but I want to thank Representative Burkle and Representative Vang for their service to that commission. With that, I hope moving forward that we will continue to have these conversations. And thank you.
Vice Chair Hussein.
Chair Vang, thank you for the great work that for putting together this final bill. I support this bill because it's protecting our nature and resource and strengthening our economy and investing in Minnesota's future. I want to emphasize and let my colleague and people know in the record that we're not opposing or we're not against any farmers. We support our farmers, and our party stand for democratic farmer labor. We are with 100%. But A1 amendment and other amendment, we need to trust the process that has happened and the people that we selected. And that's the reason why we could not support that, and we appreciate it for you bringing it forward. We could have a discussion in the future, but we should not be opposing this final bill because it's protecting and it's helping a lot of people in Minnesota. Thank you.
Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I won't repeat some of the things that Chair Heinzman said because he said it very well, but I would just share my opinion on the fact that my friends on the other side wouldn't even accept any of our amendments. We had some good amendments. Of course, the most important one we believe we fought for is for the farmers in that area that came down and testified. And I certainly didn't say you were against farming, my good friend Chair Lilly, and I say that sincerely. We are good friends. But you certainly weren't for the farmers that are here, but you are definitely for farmers because we've done a lot of good things for farmers. You have particularly as well in the committee. But if the bill today fails, Co-Chair Vang, it's on you guys. We had very reasonable amendments. Usually, we've worked well together. this is a wonderful committee, right? We all work together and we come as friends and we leave as friends because the lion's share of the work is done by the good people outside of this committee. If you remember in the beginning of last session when I took chair for the first time of the legacy and we went around and said, what's your favorite part? Parks and trails was one. Clean water, of course, is very important. Arts and culture was heard. There was very few that said Outdoor Heritage Fund, one or two. I was one that said Outdoor Heritage Fund is my favorite because of the beautiful things that organization have done. Ms. Kim Scott took Chair Vang out and I to see some of the great projects in Wright County on the restoration of the prairie land or the wetlands and bringing in the waterfowl. I had the pleasure to duck hunt in the coldest day of the end of the season and appreciate the Ducks Unlimited. So there are some great projects in here. And because you wouldn't even accept one of our amendments, which would maybe even have the opportunity to pass the bill today off the House floor to support some of these important projects is disappointing. Now, there was no gotcha amendment. These were reasonable amendments. Even Chair Vang said, Chair Lilly said, hey, it's reasonable. I could support it or not. But for those reasons, it is disappointing. We could have considered passing this out. But at the end of the day, if there was, as I said, a slight chance that the project for $3 million out of the 191 could really ruin generations of the farmlands up there. And because we have Representative Burkle here who represents those people and knows those people, and we get his advice and his counsel, we listen to them. And we listen to him. For that reason, it is going to be a tough vote against such great projects. And we hope that we can come to come to a conclusion that will be good for all parties and this bill. I guess that's all I have to say, Madam Chair. And with that, I do ask for a roll call on the vote.
Okay, a roll call being requested. Seeing no further discussion, I will just make some quick final remarks as the bill's author. Just want to thank the committee members for the opportunity to give this bill a hearing. There was a lot of things that happened this year, and there was, some questions on whether or not we would have an outdoor heritage bill. But I'm glad that we do have one in front of us today. I want to first thank the testifiers, the landowners, the farmers who came here today. I know it's been a lot. It's a couple hours of your time, as well as the gas mileage that you put in to be here to speak with members of the legislature. And I hear that it's definitely, the land is very important to you, as it is with all of us. As members who sit on the Legacy Committee, we do really invest in our resources, in protection of our land, in our water, in our air. And so I do feel how powerful it is that you guys all feel the same way too. Usually the Outdoor Heritage Bill tends to be bipartisan. Out of all the funds, it is probably the most bipartisan one. And I was hopeful that we will have more bipartisanship in this bill. Many of the sites that we visited with the Outdoor Heritage Funds, there were much of it in greater Minnesota area. We even visited one in your district too, Chair McDonald. And they were all very, very beautiful to see the dollars that we put in to protect our land and our heritage and our native and our water. It is really truly a legacy for our next generation of kids and farmers and the public. And so these dollars that we put in are powerful, and is an investment that I see for many years to come. And I do hope that today we continue on that investment. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Co-Chair Vang.
Aye.
Co-Chair McDonald.
Nay.
Co-Vice Chair Hussein.
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Scraba.
No.
Representative Burkle. Representative Cha.
Yes.
Representative DePell.
No.
Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Momani Hiltzley.
Momani Hiltzley, aye.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
All right, there not being seven ayes, the motion does not prevail and the bill is not referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And we'll just lay the bill over. And with that, members, that is really it with our agenda for today. Just want to thank everybody's time for being here today and being on time. And this meeting is adjourned.